From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's Asan Hajivandi
and Corey Clark.
Dear, I fear we're facing a problem.
Wake up. What is up, everybody? It is Wake Up WarChant, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. Coming up on today's show, reaction as we have spoken to the last of the bunch of class of 2023 for Florida State. Well, except for Dylan Brown Turner, but you get the gist. And we finally get to meet Patrick Surtain. Wake Up WarChant, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. That's in Tallahassee, Florida. CPTallybar.com is the website. Today's lunch special, cheesesteak sandwich, chicken or steak. Also, bingo night over at the CP. Don't forget that daily lunch special runs from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's only $8.99 and comes with a side dish. Fries, straight, curly, onion rings, potato salad, broccoli side salad, tater tots, or freshly cooked potato chips. All this and much, much more over at the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill. CPTallyBar.com is the website. WarChant.com, ultimate symbol sports source. Thumbs up, five-star rating and review. Subscribe. I think I got all of it. Corey's here, everybody. Corey, what up, man?
What's up, buddy? How are you doing? I'd like you to hit subscribe a little harder than that. You know what I mean? Like, really get them out there. You just kind of said subscribe if you want. That's kind of the impression I got you were saying there. And we're demanding that you subscribe.
I was on the checklist. I didn't know if I'd gotten everything on the checklist. So I was kind of like, I get everything now? Like, it subscribes at the last thing? So by
another interesting factoid about Corner Pocket is that on Thursday nights, they have cribbage. There's like a cribbage league that rents out Bill's side room. And they're out there while other people are dobbing it up trying to win $250. These folks are out there playing cribbage. I don't know how to play cribbage, but it looks intense and detailed.
I like it.
So if you're into cribbage, you know, reach out and see if you can get in that league. I guess it's a league.
Speaking of what you folks like, you like Florida State football. On Wednesday, we hung out over at the museum, devoid of artifacts, but lots of playmakers were hoping. Got to speak to the last bunch of freshmen that have enrolled here for the class of 2023, with the exception of Dylan Brown Turner, who signed on Wednesday, National Signing Day, the conventional one that we all love and grew up with, but now is completely irrelevant because our recruiting analyst goes on vacation now. I mean, I'm not knocking Michael. He deserves some time off, but like, he's a guy I can take time off now. It doesn't matter. They already got their whole class wrapped up. And we also spoke to Patrick Surtain. Let's start with Patrick Surtain. He's a grown-up. Corey, let's talk about him first.
Okay.
Shout out to you, dropping a little history lesson on him, reminding him of his time here in Doak. That was cool. Nice exchange. You were the star of the show on Wednesday. YouTube
well,
said
I had
as much.
To be. Ira left.
Yeah.
Ira had better things to do, and I mean that genuinely. He was in Tampa on Wednesday night to see Springsteen. It's for the first time in his life. So, he left on Wednesday after our first interview, wrote a story, and then got on the road so we could get down there to Tampa in time for Springsteen. So then I had to fill the void, and those are big shoes to fill.
Yes, sir.
I mean, Ira Schoffel in a press. Like, literally, they go, who was the first? Brock Glenn came in.
Yes.
And Steven is like, okay, the first question. And then he's looking at Ira to, like, look up. Like, hey, man, you're on. You're on, buddy. It's your time. And Ira was, I think, getting his story ready to write. So he wasn't quite looking up, and then he looked up and like waved his hand. He's like, all right, we'll go to Ira. But it's just understood that Ira gets the first question. But then he bounced after Brock Glenn. And then I think you and I held our own. We did all right.
We tried. Yeah, Ira, I want to do a mashup, but I'm too slow on the trigger. But like every single opening thing you use is like, all right, we'll start off with Ira Schoffel at warchant.com. Like,
right.
So I want to just do like a whole bunch of mashup on that. But anyhow. So we did speak to Patrick Surtain, who left the Miami Dolphins two-time Pro Bowler, four-time state champion head football coach over at American Heritage down there in Plantation. I thought the most interesting soundbite out of him, I thought, was towards the end when he was asked about kind of being in the meeting room with Mike Norvell, seeing how he carries himself and what he thought about it. And towards the end of his answer, he, you know, spoke about the fact that there's a blueprint in place, and he doesn't see it slowing down here anytime soon. That caught my ear the most. That was the most impressive thing I thought I heard out of Patrick Surtain. What about you?
Yeah, that was probably the one that like might resonate the most with the Florida State fans, but it's also something they've heard a lot. I think just the fact of him talking about his connections in South Florida. Like, if we're just talking about practically, what he brings to this staff other than, you know, the 11 years of the NFL and a championship pedigree as a high school coach. It is that last name, as we talked about when he was hired, and it's his connections in the Miami area, in the South Florida area. And he said it. He's like, I know all the kids, and I know all the coaches.
Yep.
And they have a belief in me. They saw what he did at American Heritage. When you are a Patrick Surtain senior that's winning championships, and all these kids are reading the papers, reading their phones, and they're following along. They see that the team you've built is winning state championships, not built, but coached. And then, because American Heritage has been good for a while, but anyway, and also that last name, that rings out, man. They like he pointed out, he's like, yeah, they probably didn't know me that much, but my son, he has kind of a name for himself too. Like all the players that he's coaching right now at Florida State, they all know the Patrick Surtain name because of his son. They may not be familiar with him, but they know his son. I just think him not owning up, that sounds like he did something wrong, just appreciating what his connections to South Florida mean as a college recruiter. That's why he's on the staff. That's a huge reason why he's on the staff. He might be an incredible tactician, but you got to go get players. And you got a connection now to the most fertile ground in the country that just oozes defensive backs every year. They're coming out from South Florida. If you can get a guy like that, that has that name and that pedigree to go along with all those connections, that's why I think it was a home run hire, man. That's why no matter if he's here for 2 years or 9 years, it's a really big swing by Mike Norvell, right? A really big swing, and I think it's hard to imagine it not working out. I don't know how long Patrick Surtain is going to be here, but even if he's only here for a couple of years, I think it's a really, really big swing and a great, I don't even want to call it a risk, just a, and not a gamble, because again, that sounds like there's a downside to it. It seems win-win all the way around.
Yeah, I don't want to underplay the recruiting aspect, but I thought he was being, and I'm not saying, I don't think you were underplaying his X and O tactician standpoint, but for me, I thought he was being hired on mainly on the basis of him just being a successful coach. I mean, him being around an NFL program here for the last year, and then what he did at American Heritage High School. And again, I know that they'd been successful even before he got there, but the fact that he sustained it, maybe even elevated it, I think to me I thought this hire was mainly like, hey man, this guy's a really good coach, and, you know, P.S., that last name, his son, his connections, that's what I never understood, the sort of, well, he's never really coached college. Can he recruit? I'm like, man, he'll be fine with that. But, like, the guy knows the game. He'll figure it out. So I guess that kind of underscores the whole win-win aspect that you're talking about. But I think they got both of those check marks. I mean, bold print, big thick Sharpie checking the boxes off, because I think he's going to be a really good coach. I think we'll see an aggressive secondary. Everybody wants to see. Now, I don't know if they're going to never turn their heads or start turning their heads around all the time, but I think we'll see an improved play out of the cornerback position. So I'm excited for it, man. And
That was another thing that he talked about too, right? Was like going and making a play on the ball. Like it's not enough just to be there. Go make a play on the ball, and they need to be better at takeaways. You know, he brought up the fact that they were fourth in the country in passing yards allowed, like only 165 a game, which is a great number, but they didn't have a ton of interceptions. And that's one thing he did it at Southern Miss, he did it in the pros. He would intercept you if it was close. And that's good to know that that's something that you think he can teach. It's a mindset, but it's also something I think you can practice. And who better else to know how to attack a ball in the air than a guy that did it for 11 years at the highest level, that was coached by Jimmy Johnson, for crying out loud. Not that it's any surprise. It was really impressive, that 15 minutes we got with him. It's cool too to me that he didn't, you know, it's not like he grew up wanting to be a football coach. You know, he even admitted, he's like, he goes, when I got done playing, I didn't think I'd ever coach. I had no interest in coaching. But then he started going to practice with his son, when his son was in Little League, and started helping out, and then realized he kind of did have a passion for it, and he was good at it. And next thing you know, he's winning state championships with his son and dozens of other high-level D1 athletes. Then he's coaching with the Dolphins. And now he's coaching at Florida State, a team that'll start next season as a top 10. That's his first coaching job as the DB's coach at DBU. So it's accelerated really quickly. Like, the guy clearly knows what he's doing. He also, again, going back to the point I made earlier, if you're going to get a guy that is known throughout a city as a I don't know if you want to call him a DB whisperer or just a coach that all the kids know, man, Miami is a really good city to be to go get. And Patrick Surtain has lived there since he played with the Dolphins. I didn't realize his daughter went to FAMU.
Not in either.
Yeah, so that's cool. So he's got family in town. I don't know if he's got other family that will be joining him. Like right now, as he said on Wednesday, he's staying at a hotel.
The AC, the Marriott, though. Yeah. He's saying they're living big.
Wait, they're not sponsoring us.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, just letting everybody know the caliber of accommodations that the staff has given. Baseball stadiums getting renovations, all this stuff. I don't know where all this money's coming from. God
He's
bless
not America. At Prince Murat.
Oh,
They hooked him up. It was a cool 15 minutes. It was a fun 15 minutes. I wrote a story that's on the website now. Obviously, the video's on our YouTube channel and on our website. So go watch that. He's a pretty engaging guy, and I think you'll like what he says about Norvell, what he says about Florida State, and what he says about the type of player he's trying to coach and what he's trying to get out of him.
Would I have killed the vibe in the room if I would have asked him if he's seen the path that Deion Sanders is on, and is he trying to chase that? Would that have killed the vibe in the room?
Yeah, I think so. Because, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you bringing up Deion? Don't bring up Deion. I know it's DBU, and a lot of that had to do with Deion. He was pretty good in college, if you guys don't remember. By the way, so I did ask him. I did remember that game that night. So I had forgotten until I was talking with Jeff. I keep forgetting that Surtain went to Southern Miss. And when I looked it up, I'm like, that's right. He was on that 96 team. And that 96 Southern Miss team was a pretty good team. And they came in kind of late in the year to Doak. It was like a November game, I think. It wasn't early in the season. It was kind of a weirdly scheduled non-conference game. And I do remember watching it with my dad. It was on the same day that Georgia beat Auburn in the game where Uga tried to bite the Auburn receiver, Robert Baker. It was that same game, same day. I remember watching the game with my dad on the Deuce, back when it was the Deuce.
Yeah.
And it was a close game. Like, Southern Miss came in and they took a lead, and it was 14-14 the second quarter, and we keep wondering if Busby's ever going to, you know, if he's going to quit throwing interceptions. And then, Florida State scored 40 straight points and won that game. But that was funny the way he remembered that. It's like, we were actually up 7-0 in that game. And I'm like, actually, it was 14-14 in the second quarter. And he's like, what did it end, 50-14? And I'm like, well, close, 54-14. He's like, so they outscored us 40-0 the rest of the way. So he remembered, we couldn't even do three-step drops because of Boulware and Renard Wilson coming off the edge. They had Warwick Dunn. Peter Warwick was on that team. So it's kind of cool that he remembered. I mean, he saw Florida State in its heyday, glory days, that 96 Florida State team. So, that's cool that he now gets to coach with Ron Dugans after playing against him 27 years ago.
It's being mildly serious, though, because I wonder what he thinks his path is. Like, to leave an NFL job to come here to be a full-time position coach on the field, like, does that mean you think that college head coach is more in your wheelhouse? Or, do you want to maybe – and do you go from here and that bridges you to, like, a coordinator job in the NFL? But we'll find these things out as we are one of the lucky people that cover college football that get to speak to these coaches throughout the season, so we'll see how
Absolutely
it goes.
Right. I wonder if he. I was thinking, like, if to come down to college now, knowing that just the way he talked, I would not be surprised if this is the ladder he wants to climb. It wouldn't make sense if he wanted to go back to the NFL to come to Florida State. I think I think he thinks he could be a head coach in college, and maybe the ladder is quicker at a place like Florida State, especially if you're joining what looks to be a ready-made program for the next year or two.
I guess we'll file this under TBD, though. But he did mention that, he knew Randy Shannon because Randy Shannon coached for the Dolphins for 3 seasons while he was there. Is this the best recruiting pull for Randy Shannon? I don't want to give him full credit for it, but I would assume that he probably was in somebody's ear in this transaction, if you will. This is big.
Because he coached him with the Dolphins. That's what Surtain said. He goes, that's how old Randy is. He coached me. So that was funny. He also said that his highlights, he's like, he had to get VHS tapes to show his players, and they don't even know what VHS tapes are for his highlights. But I was going to say it probably trumps the 1,836th ranked player in the country that signed with Florida State on the aforementioned that signed with Florida State on Wednesday. But that's the beauty of college football.
Is that really Dylan Brown Turner's ranking? 1,000? Jeez.
1,836. I mean, he was a North Texas commit. But that's the beauty, man, is there are always these guys that are undervalued, underrated, barely hook on with the school, and then end up being really good players. So I hope that the odds are against them. When usually these guys are ranked 1,836th for a reason, but there are guys that break through the cracks or play well above their ranking. And I always remember Jimbo talking about his first or second class at LSU. Josh Reed was the last guy they took a commitment from. Like, he was the last day. Josh Reed was he was between two small schools. LSU finally offered him on the last day, on signing day. Offered him. He was the last take they had, and they begrudgingly gave it to him, and they ended up being like a two-time SEC player of the year.
I think Biletnikoff winner too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he was really good.
Reminds me too. Remember Mr. Alexander? Remember a guy, Mr. Alexander? Yeah, I think he was like a last signee of a class out of Texas, three-star guy. Ended up being pretty decent for us. I think I had a nice
Nate Andrews led the 2013 team in interceptions, and it was between Minnesota and like UAB until Florida State offered on the last day. So yeah, it does happen occasionally.
All right, Brock Glenn, quarterback, QB1, dealing with technical stuff while he was talking, so I didn't get to hear a
QB4,
lot.
QB4, right. Really?
QB1 of the future.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Hakeem said that. Hakeem's like, we're the future. I wonder what AJ Duffy feels about that, but that's for that's for another date and time. Talked about the fact that the staff stayed on the entire time. That made quite an impression on him. Listen, that's kind of how they ended up getting Azaria Thomas. Azaria Thomas had interest in a lot of different other programs, and one by one, those head coaches got fired, whether it was Florida, Oklahoma, or LSU. And listen, I'm just saying, Mike Norvell stuck with it. I mean, it paid off. Yeah. You know, he could have given up after the first or second time when he's like, hey, man, I'm going to go here. You know, Brock Glenn was committed to Ohio State. They were in on him kind of early. They ended up going Chris Parson. Chris Parson decommits. Felt like Glenn was going to fall into place really quickly, but it didn't happen nearly as fast as we thought. But he did mention that they just kept the pedal to the metal, foot on the gas, and, you know, Tokars and Norvell were with him the entire way, and that really kind of made an impact. So, again, this becomes more interesting to kind of see how much they evaluate these players, how much they covet them, and then how they end up performing for them. But this seems to be one of the guys that, again, Mike Norvell's sort of gumption and stick-to-itiveness has paid off with.
Yeah, and I also like the attitude when I asked him about, like, he knows he's not going to play this year. And I wasn't trying to be rude, but he knows that. He's the fourth-string quarterback coming in. He's a true freshman. They have a Heisman candidate at quarterback. And then, you know, Tate's been here 3 or 4 years now. So odds are, unless something drastic happens, Brock Glenn is not going to see the field. And how he adjusts to that, and he, you know, I thought he was really good about it. He's like, look, I kind of did the same thing in high school. I was a freshman on the high school team, and I learned from a veteran, and then I assume he took over as a sophomore, and, you know, that's where it took off. But he did seem to have a mature attitude about it, which you need to as a quarterback. You can't come in and expect to play, especially this program right now. But that he wants to try to soak up as much information as he can from all three of those guys. And I know that everybody's going to say that, but it seemed genuine. Like, he knows this is a year to learn as much as possible. So that's what stood out to me, I guess, with Brock Glenn, is that he knows his place. And he even compared it to, like, look, we do this all the time in our life. Like, you adjust from, well, he said kindergarten to middle school, which caught my ear. I was like, did you just skip elementary school? How do they do it up there? Where's he from? Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
Were they in Tennessee? They don't have elementary school, or your kindergarten goes up to the sixth grade. But he went, you know, when you do from kindergarten, I assume he meant elementary school. But those adjustments we all make in life, from, you know, you're in kindergarten, and then all of a sudden you're a first grader in a five grade school. You're low man on the totem pole, and you work your way up to a fifth grader. Then you do it all over again in middle school, and then you do it all over again in high school. So he was trying to make the point of, this isn't that rare to, like, go from being a star football player to then being the lowest guy on the totem pole and having to work your way up, because we all do it in all walks of life. So I saw that was a mature approach, but I haven't seen him throw a pass. So I'll reserve judgment on what kind of quarterback he's going to be, probably for another year. But yeah, I certainly was impressed by his maturity and just the way he spoke to us.
Savor a shot of energy while nourishing your body with a compound of essential vitamins with Vitamin Energy. Small package, sizable punch. It's less than 2 ounces. Take a shot. you will have full, unadulterated energy and vitamins for 7 hours or more in your entire day with just a shot of Vitamin Energy. Go to vitaminenergy.com. Use the promo code WARCHAMPBOGO, B-O-G-O, and you will get an item of equal or lesser value for absolutely free with your order. So, you know, do the math. It'll be like a buck and a quarter for a shot of this stuff. It actually tastes really good, man. I like the Sport Plus, the Blue Raspberry. I was big on the Immune Plus, Corey. I'm a Florida boy. The citrus gets to me. But the Blue Raspberry, pretty tasty too. Feeling good. Hour number five of this? So I'm cruising, man. I got plenty left in the tank, Corey.
That's what I say. You got two more hours, son.
At least
two more hours. Yeah, I was just looking. I went to a new one today, and I took it like an hour ago. So I hope you hear the pep in my voice because Daddy was struggling a little bit, honestly, because I didn't take it yesterday for some reason, and then today I felt it after my workout. I felt it, but I did the B12.
Okay.
And I did the. How do you pronounce ACAI? Is it a kai?
Acai?
Acai?
No, that's a Japanese beer, acai.
Well, whatever. But it's the acai pomegranate. Man, that's my favorite flavor of the bunch, gang. Okay. And it really did. Within 20 minutes, I felt more pep. And this baby's going to last the whole night. The whole night. So, yeah, that was, yeah, man, it really was. It was. I almost wanted to drink it just to drink it because of the taste of it. But that might be too much. I don't want to be, you know, doing shots of this for, you know, one right on top of the other for, you know, nine straight shots. But I could. And think of all those vitamins, folks.
By the way, Corey, you just had more vitamin B12 than a 6 ounce piece of wild tuna, than 20 pieces of 6 ounce wild tuna. So.
Oh, okay. So vitamins. 120 ounces of wild tuna.
Vitamins and energy, everybody. VitaminEnergy.com. Use the promo code WARCHAMPBOGO.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends, so for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, one other thing about Brock Glenn that I found interesting, and it kind of maybe segues us a little bit to Hakeem Williams, because that is what I thought was the most interesting soundbite of Hakeem, was them talking about Tour of Duty. And Brock Glenn was just talking about how just how sort of taxing it obviously is, but he was, you know, he pointed out just he sees the bigger picture, right? He talked about, he said mental health. I think he probably meant more like mental, you know, resiliency kind of. But just the fact that what they're being put through now, being an 18-year-old freshman, he understands how it's going to pay off for them in the long run. And he's embracing this already, which, again, is huge to see from a kid so young who's going to be buried on the depth chart, not because of his talent, but just simply because of the numbers and his age. And then Hakeem Williams was talking about, yeah, man, at first I was nervous, and I was like, ah, it won't be that bad. Then I guess they showed them PowerPoint slides. This needs to be part of our story that we hopefully end up doing someday with Josh Storm's core, but I want to see the PowerPoint because the way they hit the practice field, I mean, even day one when he took over before COVID wiped out the rest of it, I always wonder, like, they have to kind of have a dress rehearsal almost where it's like, all right, listen, if you're DBs, this is where you're going after stretch. If your receiver's going over here. So I do want to see how they break it out and show them what it's going to look like when it comes to a tour of duty. But Hakeem's like, yeah, I was like, it doesn't look that bad. But he says, as soon as you get on the field, it's game time. And again, this just kind of goes to show, you know, just how dedicated this strength staff is to creating a program that's going to push these kids to the absolute limit so that they're ready when the actual fourth quarter does roll through in a football game. So I thought that was kind of the most that was the best bite, the buzziest bite I thought out of Hakeem. What'd you think?
Yeah. I mean, it was one of them for sure. And the fact that he's like, yeah, I was nervous. Like he was nervous at first, and then he was nervous when he got out there. But then I think he said it was like just kind of anything else. Like you get used to it. It's really hard, but it's supposed to be hard. And when it comes to Hakeem, number one, he's a pretty giant dude. Like he's a big kid.
You just saw Lucas Simmons. I don't know if I'm going to call it. I don't know if we'll call
Hakeem. Yeah, but for a receiver, you just don't expect him to be built quite like that. Yeah. He's a big kid, man. For a teenager. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't Lucas Simmons, who was, we'll get to in a second, but good grief with that guy. But yeah, I thought Hakeem was I liked his I don't know, man, his spirit, his personality.
Yeah. No.
I just seemed to like, he seemed to be kind of fun loving. Brock Glenn is his roommate, and Brock said he's really funny, and he seems that way. Now you hope and you certainly expect that he's going to take things seriously when it matters, but it's cool that he has a personality, and he talked about how he didn't see any selfishness at all from this team at all. Because look, man, he's joining and I asked them this, like, you're joining a team that has a lot of talent, or a position group that has a lot of talent and a lot of proven talent coming back. But you know, he also wants to get on the field too. Like, how do you, what are you expecting from yourself? What did they said they expect from you? And he's like, look, I'm just a big body speedster. But he admits he's got, he's got to follow. He's trying to glean as much information as he can from the veterans. And he's trying to ask him as many questions as he can. And he said repeatedly he's trying to soak up as much as he can from those guys. And that's the perfect attitude to have. It's certainly the perfect things to say, whether he believes it or not. Like, he might come in and be like, I'm better than all these guys. I better get 50 targets or 100 targets this year. It's certainly the right thing to say when you're trying to ingratiate yourself. And he knows who he is. He knows that the guys on this team know that there aren't many, like, dudes that came out of high school on this team. There are plenty of guys that have proven themselves at this level, but not who on this team was a five-star coming out of high school that was like a big deal, especially on offense.
Yeah.
Not many, right? Any?
Johnny was kind of close, but no, he wasn't five though. But yeah.
So this guy is different than all of them. So he knows that, like, you know, that these receivers and these guys could look at him with not a jaundiced eye, but like, all right, man, what's your deal, man? How good are you really? Let's see what you're all about. And if he came in with the wrong attitude, there could be some friction there. But it certainly seems, no surprise to anyone, that he's basically ingratiated himself to the team. He's asking all the veterans questions, and that he's just trying to play his part and play his role. At least saying as much, which is an important step. Just doing that, it's like, yeah, I expect to get. I'll always remember Corey Cerency. His first and only year at Florida State, asked about his preseason goals, was 1,200, 1,400 yards and like 16 to 18 touchdowns. Nice. It's like, all right, man, you've not played, I don't think, 1 year of like organized padded football, and you're expecting all this. So anyway, I don't know how well his teammates responded to that, but Hakeem Williams is not that guy. He is not saying that kind of stuff. He just wants to be a part of the team, you know, according to him on Wednesday, which is, it's good to hear, man, because he's different than any of the other guys. There's nobody else that comes in with the hype or came into college with the hype that Hakeem Williams is coming in, and he knows how big a deal he is, but he seems to be handling it pretty well so far.
I mean, all these guys are excited to be at Florida State, but to your point about him, just kind of the way he carries himself, he does seem very at ease, very confident that he made the right decision, and he's happy to see it pay off the way they finished the season, because he did commit. He was one of the guys that committed when things weren't as rosy. And that was kind of a really cool thing to kind of see him just talk about how confident he is in the staff. And he mentioned he was being recruited by everybody, right? He was being recruited by some of the programs that are really, really known for their NIL, A&M and Miami in particular. And I liked how he mentioned it made me think about Entourage and when Vinny Chase is like looking for a new agent, like in one of the later seasons, and like he's going to leave Ari, and then he goes to all these, different agencies, and they do the whole sales pitch, and they're like, Mercedes-Benz, Xerox, Vinny Chase, and like it's all script, right? Like they just like roll it out for you, and he said that like on two occasions that it wasn't like that here, they didn't have a script. They most schools say the same thing, but these coaches were different. And that's why I think, man, you know, this offseason is going to be really exciting because there's so much meat on the bone there if you're a fan to really think, like, what if Florida State really does have something special here? Like, what if these coaches really are kind of a different breed? We're seeing it on our end in terms of our profession, Corey and I. Like, we get to speak to these guys all the single time. They offer up the coaching staff. They offer up all these players that are true freshmen.
Yeah.
No one else is doing this sort of stuff. And, you know, the cynic in us maybe is like, man, the shoe's going to drop on the other foot. There's no way you can, you know, try to run a program and be this open. I mean, you have to be secretive. You have to be defensive. And, like, nobody is. And I think that's the big exciting thing this offseason, man. There's so much reason to think that maybe there is something different going on here that's going to end up paying off on the field in a big way this year.
Yeah, it is. And I've mentioned this before, but anytime I'll tweet out, like, our, you know, we've talked to 61 players and we talked to every, including every freshman and every coach, and we watched all these practices. If I tweet that out, the responses I get from other media members are just, they're flabbergasted. Yeah. They can't believe it. And I think it not only because it's not normal, it's certainly not normal at a place like Florida State. And I just, again, I say this, as I take as much time every time to stress how appreciative we are and how I hope appreciative all you guys are for the access we get, because we could be in the wilderness for 9 months, man, wait for this season to start. But we actually do get access. We get things to talk about. You guys get videos to watch. You get to know these players better than you would if you just see them for 4 minutes after a game. I mean, we get these guys all year long if we want. It's the most open, I have to imagine, it's the most open program in the country. And it didn't seem to affect them on the field that much. Seemed like they had a pretty good season. And they seem to be poised for another good season. And, I just hope that's appreciated, that we got every single newcomer. Like, remember coaches don't let freshmen talk at all, period. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just at all. We didn't get to talk. Rashad Green was the leading receiver for a Florida State football team, and we didn't get to talk to him once until the Notre Dame game, the Champs Bowl. That was the first time we got to talk to Rashad Green, and he was the leading receiver and a cool kid. So, like we talked about Josh Sweat, we didn't get to know about that he builds and rebuilds computers. We never got to talk to the kid. So it's really cool, the access, and I just hope you guys appreciate that not only do we get all the freshmen, multiple times per season, we get every coach if we ask for them. And I think that's a big deal too, because I think you learn more about the players at the position. Like, Norvell's great, sure. But when you talk to the position coach, those are the guys that can really steer you or tell you, yeah, this guy's a real player, or yeah, he's still got some work to do. Like, I just think that access is it's unparalleled, and it's always going to be appreciated. And Wednesday was no different, man. We talked to three freshmen and an assistant coach. Probably the only football media, media beat, football, college football beat in the country that did that on Wednesday. It might, for the whole month of February, we might be the only ones that talked to a position coach and three freshmen. That just does not happen. So, kudos. You guys are lucky. You're lucky to have this.
MyBookie.ag, promo code WARCHANT gets you an instant cash deposit bonus, which you can use on your first bet, and hopefully will be a winner. Let's see here, Corey. MVP odds for the Super Bowl. It's now a 1.5-point line. The Eagles are favored. I'm on Kansas City on the money line. I'm just going to go with the team I think has got the better quarterback. So that's my long-winded explanation on that one. It's going to be, I say the quarterback. What about Travis Kelce? What could he go for, like, two catches and, like, 120 and become an MVP?
Two 10, catches? 70, no.
10 to 1
odds.
Did
you say odds? 2 or 10?
10 catches. Two touchdowns. Like,
I just think
yards.
It's the guy throwing to him is going to get more credit. It's really hard. I mean, Jerry Rice did it 1 year. You just don't see a lot of receivers get the MVP or pass catchers. I mean, it's not a 10 to 1. It's good odds, though, because he's really good. But, yeah, he would have to have a monster day, like three touchdowns or something. Because Mahomes is throwing them all, and you know they're all going to want to give it to Mahomes. So Kelce would have to have, like, a next-level day with a couple unbelievable catches for win the MVP. But, like, at 10 to 1, what's Mahomes at? What's his number?
He's, like, 1 to 1. Even odds, pretty much.
Say it's even odds, yeah. So, yeah, 10 to 1, that's not a bad idea. You know he's going to throw to him a ton.
Also, get the misses involved. Or maybe you really are a big Rihanna fan. There's odds on what her first song of the halftime show will be. Rihanna's song, Better Have My Money, 12 to 1 payout, Corey.
What about the one with Eminem? Is that a Super Bowl song? The one where I guess it's a domestic violence song. Eminem comes in. You know what I'm talking about?
I
Love the Way You Lie. I think that's the name of it.
That's not on the board. Not on the board.
Like, that's Corey, not on the board.
Corey knows knows the culture.
But of course I do, especially the 50-year-old white rappers. I would say that because you know she's going to have a special guest. Well, I guess Rihanna's duetted with everyone. So I was going to say you would think Eminem would be a part of it. It's in Arizona. That's close enough to L.A. or Vegas. But, yeah, I think my odds would be on a song where she has she partners up with someone.
Okay.
Like Jay-Z. Someone like that. Umbrella, that might be a good one too.
Corey really going for it. I can't even talk about the fact that there's a line on whether or not she's going to show cleavage. There really is. Mybookie.ag. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere. Use the promo code WARCHAN. Big man. He can take the rear in the show. We'll save it for the last guy that we'll speak about. Lucas Simmons, who actually is a full 6'8", everybody. Legitimate. Correct, Corey? He's the mountain.
Sure seemed like it. It's hard for me to differentiate between 6'7 and 6'8 at my size. But yeah, he was big. Big kid.
Nice kid from Sweden originally. His father played at OU, but his mom is the one who pushed him to play football. What were some of the things that you took away? What were some of the more interesting factoids maybe you found out about a one Lucas Simmons who came to Clearwater, played at an academy down in Clearwater before coming here to Florida State? Everybody wanted him. Southern Cal was in the mix for him. I think Tennessee, Florida. What do you like about old Lucas Simmons besides the fact he's just huge and seems to be a really nice kid?
Yeah, you know, he was the least talkative of the three newcomers we had. So it was hard to get a ton of information from him. And again, it's a weird setting for these guys. It's awesome that they do it. But, you know, he has probably not had many moments in his life where he's got 10 dudes shouting questions at him while he stands at a podium. But he handled it well.
Well, also don't think English is his first language. That could just be my theory, though. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, he handled it well, and he speaks well. Yeah. But yeah, just the fact that he's from Sweden is interesting. We didn't even ask him about like the bikini teams. They
I was
have
asking about
there,
IKEA,
apparently.
Like, man, like are the meatballs?
Yeah, next time we get him meatballs. But the fact that he's only been playing since he was 13 or 14, and he did bring up that he played soccer a lot. Growing up, because you know football isn't really a thing in Sweden. He had to play on a club team because they don't have high school teams over there. But he talked about playing soccer, and that you know as a big kid, he really had to you know if he wanted to compete in a sport like soccer, he really had to concentrate on athleticism and footwork. Like he could, it's not like you're. I mean, it's great, you know, if they're on a cross to be able to head a ball in when you're taller than everyone. But actually getting up and down the field and being a good soccer player, you've got to be athletic and got to have quick feet and good feet. And so I think the fact that he played soccer should probably bode pretty well for him because, you know what I mean? Quick feet at offensive line is a really big deal. And then also the fact that he said it wasn't – I couldn't quite tell the time frame of when he – but when he finally realized he needed to start using his frame in his size.
Yes.
Because he said he didn't like being a tall kid.
Yeah.
And he always kind of wanted to shy away from it and like, no, I'm not this tall giant. I'm an athlete. But then finally one day in practice or in a game, he realized using his frame and his length, this is how I become good. I should embrace this. Now he's all excited about being 6'8", but apparently that wasn't the case a few years ago.
He's one of these kids where let's put a bookmark on his recruiting ranking because – man, if he fills out a little bit more, which there's no reason to think he will not, 6'8", being coached by this guy, being Alex Atkins, I think he'll maybe be better than the 124th player in the NFL draft. Just a theory.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes, though, everybody. We'll see how it goes. So,
but yeah, there's a lot to work with there, man. There's a lot of good clay to mold. It's 6'8" clay, but it's also, again, it's a kid that's athletic and can move his feet. And when you're 6'8" and can move, man, that makes offensive line coaches and scouts and everybody else salivate because usually guys that are 6'8" and big are kind of slow footed, like cement blocks on their feet. This kid probably isn't that. I can't say for sure because I hadn't seen it in person going up against Jared Verse. But that's another thing too, is he's really going to get a chance. He's going to be thrown into the fire in the sense that he's going to go up against some really talented guys in Peyton and Verse. Yep. and you get welcome, and just the whole defensive line in general, you get welcomed to the party really quickly like that, and you either swim or sink. And he certainly seems like the kind of guy. I mean, he wouldn't have come all the way over to Florida basically to live by himself to play football to then not embrace this challenge. So I assume he's going to swim.
Corey, how many five stars do you think are in the Super Bowl? The Chiefs and the Eagles this year.
Was there 106 guys on the active roster total between the two? I would say Josh Sweat's one.
Correct.
So I would say 9.
12.
Oh. Wow.
And there's two Knowles. Also our guy Josh Kando. Georgia.
Is he on the active roster?
Yeah. I think, well, I mean, okay, they, oh, he's not, maybe not. He's on their roster. I know that. Okay. But he doesn't he's not dressing. I think he's hurt. But yeah, like he's drawing a check this year. So
good. Good. Okay, that counts.
Georgia, the other team with two. Mecole Hardman and N'Kobe Dean.
There you go.
So found that interesting. I think some people are arguing
about.
Well,
no, Georgia's got Jordan Davis, too. He's on the big kid, the big defensive tackle. He's on the Eagles.
Take it up with Fox Sports. They're the one.
All right, come on, Fox Sports.
Maybe,
get it together.
You sure he maybe wasn't? Was he five-star consensus? Maybe?
Oh, no, you're right. I was just thinking of top draft picks. No, you're right. Yeah, I don't think he was a five-star. My bad. My
fault. So, and people are saying, well, does recruiting matter or not? Because obviously there's only 12, which means there's a whole bunch of three or four stars, much more. But then there's also only, like, you know, 25 stars a year, and there's, I don't know, hundreds of three,
yes,
four star players.
But you know what was more, what was much more interesting than that, I think, was Feldman for The Athletic. I think he wrote a story about it, but I just saw the tweet and I can't remember the exact numbers. But he was breaking down the Pro Bowl rosters, and he said the average star rating on the for the Pro Bowl offensive players was like 2.5 or 3.
Wow!
But the average star rating for the defensive players was like 4.5, coming out of high school. So I thought that was really interesting. Like, offense is much more of a
crapshoot. I mean, it's look at the quarterbacks. No one knows. Like, wasn't Josh Allen part of the? Was he the class with Josh Rosen and like a couple other dudes that no one really knew all that much about? It might have been another one, but the hit rate on quarterbacks is so ridiculously low, which is crazy because they do the 7-on-7 stuff. You figure they'd be so primed. They go to college. They're getting all the coaching. You think that would be the one part that you'd be able to for sure know, but clearly they do not, and defense, to the point that, you know, Feldman and you are making, seems to be a little bit more translatable, if that's a word. So
yeah, and we're talking about from high school to college.
Yes.
Like, you can tell a high school defensive lineman, you can tell Timmy Jernigan's going to be great, really good, and you can tell that N'Kobe Dean is going to be a really good linebacker, and then Jalen Ramsey and Derwin James, those guys translate. That's ridiculous talent. Those are five-star talents that you know are going to be really good in college. It can be different with receivers, man. How many five-star receivers have come through here that were just pretty good or not good? They haven't had many five-star defensive backs that didn't turn out to be badasses. Mm-hmm. When they get here, they usually live it up. They live up to their ranking. Receivers, running backs, that could be like James Wilder was a five-star running back, but was he really? He's a nice player, but he wasn't a five-star. Devontae Freeman was a zero-star until Jimbo recruited him. And so I do think there's something, especially with the offensive line, too. Now, that is a real crapshoot when it comes to who's going to be really good. And they grow so much, and they develop so much differently. Some kid that's like 18 or 19, like we're talking about, Lucas Simmons. Now, I know he was ranked pretty high. He's a highly ranked guy for this recruiting class. But he might be, by the 3 years from now, he might be the best player in the country. We don't know. It's hard to know how these guys are going to develop once they get into a real strength program and they get real coaching at this level. So, I can't figure out the reasoning exactly, but it must be much more easy to dissect how good a defensive player is going to be, a 4- and 5-star defensive player, as it is to an offensive player.
Anything stand out talking to Link the other day as we wrap up?
Oh, yeah.
Baseball.
You guys know my history with this program and the Martin family, and they were always very, very good to me. It is different talking to that guy. Ira and I actually watched practice. That was pretty different too. What I really liked about it, and I'm a baseball dude. I'm not trying to bore anyone, but I've watched a lot of teams take kind of they'll do batting practice and they'll have other kids running the bases, right? Like getting their running in, getting their base running work in. They do it in a different way where, like, the kids at second base, and I saw this, there's a guy getting a lead at second base, and then one of the batters is in there just taking his normal BP reps, and he hits a ball that is a line drive to center, but not on a line necessarily, not like 20 feet in the air, but not 4 feet in the air either. So it's not for sure going to be a base hit or not. And the kid at second just starts running towards third. And they, you know, the coach that's out there with him is like, absolute. And I don't know if it's a coach or GA. I didn't have my glasses. I couldn't see. Sorry, gang, I'm old. They basically yelled at the kid like, hey, man, that could have been caught. Like, you can't just blindly run. We've got one out right here. So they are putting them through the paces of real base running work as the other guys are getting batting practice work. They're trying, you know, you're on second, and you know for sure it's a base hit in the gap. You're scoring. Then they go to third, and they're like, okay, get a lead. There's one out. On contact, you're going. They're doing this as the kid is taking real batting practice. So I just like the efficiency of it. And the fact that base running, for all the good things that Mike Martin Jr. did, and he was always, like I said, really good to me for a long time, and Mike Martin Sr. Too, they have not been a good base running team in a long, long time. It's flabbergasting how bad they've been. It certainly seems like this guy takes that very, very seriously. So that was cool to see. And Cam Smith, the freshman, I can't remember. He's their most hyped freshman. He was the number one shortstop in Florida. He was like the number 50 player in the country. He is 6'3", 220 pounds. He is built like a tight end. He is huge and he can move. He's an athlete. And when he squares it up, good night. I can't remember them having a position player, and I don't know how good he's going to be. He's going to struggle some. He's a freshman.
Drew Mendoza is big.
But not built like this, man. Mendoza was tall and lanky.
Okay.
This kid looks like a football player. Like, just built. Like, the back muscles. And I'm into muscles now, guys.
Oh, you are.
I mean, that's all I do is I dissect deltoids. Our pecs. Anything, really. Any muscle. But, he is just put together differently. It's going to be really – he's going to be playing third base probably, starting there. So, it's going to be really interesting to see. But that kid was really impressive when the ball was jumping off his bat. He hit one halfway up the scoreboard. He was hitting him out to right center where he didn't even seem like he took a real hard swing. Just natural, easy power and can move, can run. So he'll be fun to watch.
Hey, we'll be fun, and we'll be fun to watch at 7 o'clock tonight. We'll be live on YouTube, Corey and I, live edition of Wake Up War Chant. So tune in for that. Bring your questions. It'll be fun. In the meantime, though, Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock. Plenty more over at warchant.com as well. Hit the thumbs up and subscribe. Is that better, Corey?
There you go, man. Thankfully. Finally, get people to do it, man. Dude, don't do it passively. Be aggressive with this stuff.
He's Corey. I'm Aslan. Thank you for listening to Wake Up War Chant, presented by the Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.